Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I knew it was an accident. You know, I saw it on his face. He was looking scared. So it was a change that I got away from. It was just a tough moment for me, you know, but I was able to, you know, control myself and stay in the game.
Middays on the Score.
White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson, who got hit in the head by a pitch last night. We are discussing that and the harrowing incident down in Houston. We either, those of us, those of you on text asking, are we going to continue to discuss that? Absolutely.
Of course we are.
We are going to have room for absolutely all of it here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Score. So let's hear the dueling narratives, shall we, of what happened to Tim Anderson last night, starting with Jason Benetti and Steve Stone.
Tim Anderson back in the lineup for the first time since Friday. We saw him as a pinch runner in Game 1 yesterday, and he faces a Royals team that knows a lot about Tim very intimately after, oh, you know, the melee that happened on his watch. But Tim is he's a bona fide all-star candidate right now.
Well, I believe that one way or the other, he's got to get there. When you take a look at the first month plus of the season and then carry it into May with a batting average still at .337, he's done quite a job and factor in his running and defense, and he is an all-star. And he got hit in the head.
Tim gets hit. He looks back at the mound, and Sparkman gets ejected, so Mark Carlson knows the history. Maldonado's screaming at him. Here comes Ned Yost, and off we go as Nick Capra's running in from third base to check on Tim Anderson. Maldonado's irate. Yost is as well, but frankly, they shouldn't have done what started this in the first place. And so Maldonado's screaming at him, but what do you expect the umpires to do? This guy was involved in a melee. The Royals hit him last time, then he hits him again. Whether it's intentional or not, they made their bid. That they put themselves in this scenario, well, frankly, look, is what ended up happening. So there you go.
Without Mark Carlson being a mind reader, he just thought that there was one tight pitch, this one, regardless of what it was, and maybe it was this game related, nothing to do with the last time, but it was up and into Tim and hit him in the head. And so Sparkman will take a seat. He's ejected. Tim fortunately just got the tip of the helmet.
When what happened last time happened, you don't get the same margin of error. That's why this occurs, and that's why your pitcher gets ejected. So, again, intent doesn't matter in this circumstance. The foundation was laid, and good news is Tim's okay.
Perfect.
Take a lap, Benetti.
Absolutely note perfect by
context
Jason Benetti
matters
on NBC Sports Chicago.
Context matters. Context matters. And that's what you're going to hear in the stark difference between the way the White Sox broadcast evaluated Tim Anderson getting an 85, 86 mile an hour changeup up at the bill of the hat versus the way the Royals broadcast handled it. That's the difference.
That was an 86 mile an hour pitch.
What?
That is an 86 mile an hour pitch.
What the?
And the Royals would be lucky to keep Martin Maldonado in the game. At some point, the White Sox, who are angry right now, will go into their video room and they will see that the pitch was 86 miles an hour. And even with the history that, and someone's going to tell Tim Anderson eventually that that was an 86 mile an hour pitch, not a fastball. And I will guarantee you that part of the plan tonight was not to hit Tim Anderson. Now, Ned Yost is already in a bad spot with his pitching. That's a changeup. It's unfortunate. It looks really bad, but you don't try and hit a guy with a changeup.
Not usually. That's what he's saying. He's saying it was a changeup.
That is bad umpiring. Good guy, good umpire, got caught up in the moment and put the Royals in a really tough spot. Glenn Sparkman was ejected after hitting Tim Anderson with a changeup. He's had a couple of long conversations with Mark Carlson. Well, HUD, you played 10 years in the big leagues, Monty 13 years, and safe spaces have now made it to Major League Baseball.
Where to start? Ryan Lefevre, Rex Hudler. The fact that, are you as bothered as I am by the fact that said someone's going to explain to Tim Anderson?
Oh, yeah.
All-star shortstop
That
someone else will explain to him that that was a changeup?
You're asking me whether it's annoying that Ryan Lefevre doesn't understand Tim has been on an entire campaign for about 8 weeks now, explaining to people that baseball ought to be fun. This is the way I'm going to play it, while knowing what comes attached to how he's going to play the game, that he needs to be explained that it was a changeup. Tim said right after the game, I knew it was an accident. I saw it on his face. You heard the cut coming back from the break. Tim knew this was an accident. That doesn't mean he has to like it. And quite frankly, if Ned Yost is in such a bad place with his rotation and his bullpen, then he's got to take into account the fact that he hit Tim Anderson a couple of weeks ago. He did it. That has to be part of the management here. Ned Yost sucks. He's terrible as a baseball manager. Sure, he knows the game and he's old school and he's got all this stuff going back and forth for you. But when you got a bullpen that's constructed to manager-proof your World Series team, then he gets himself into trouble while managing that very same bullpen in a World Championship year, you kind of suck. Secondly, if you're going to go ahead and do the thing after the game where you go, oh, you mean the pitch that just got away when they hit Anderson on purpose the first time? Oh, it just got away. Well, then you've, like Benetti said, you've made your bed. You've already told everyone that you're the team that's going to hit someone. And then after you do it, you're going to go, oh, we didn't mean to hit him. So when you say, oh, we didn't mean to hit him, it was an 86-mile-an-hour changeup. Who hit somebody with a changeup? No one believes you. No one cares. And you suck.
And the difference between an 86-mile-an-hour baseball to the face and a 93-mile-an-hour baseball to the face, if I lined you up and we shot a jugs gun, would you be able to tell me the difference between those two that hit you in the face?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not for weeks.
Because you know what I'd think? 86 to the face, probably bad.
Yeah, it hurts.
Probably bad. Probably hurts. Probably does bad things. So for a guy sitting all the way up in the press box, ah, oh, man, that's an 86-mile-an-hour pitch. Pah, that's like a wiffle ball. I mean, the assumption that's made there, it's like, oh, that's just an Ephus pitch. That's a Nerf ball. 86, he's dismissing 86 as something that wouldn't hurt.
They had it so ready to go, too.
Yep.
As soon as it hit him, 86, that was 86, as if they sort of knew it was coming anyway.
It's so stupid. It's monumentally stupid. If it's unintentional, then you shouldn't have thrown at him earlier in the season. And if it was, now you've put your guy in the jackpot. Ned Yost is the guy that caused Sparkman to get tossed from the game last night. Ned Yost is the guy that put his own rotation and bullpen in a bad spot because he decided that Tim Anderson was important. It's cowboy managing. He cost that ball club, even despite a little bit of a comeback, and they got themselves to a one-run game. How beautiful, too, that Tim Anderson ropes one down the third base line for the eventual game winner. That's nice. Chef's kiss on that one. But my God, man. You've got a manager out there needing to take revenge and trying to stand up for his team in a way that nobody gives a damn about anymore.
And it hurt his team.
And really, I think they'd be happier if their starter stayed in the ballgame more than two innings.
This segment brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team. Get in the game this weekend with Superhero Night Friday. Best postgame fireworks on Saturday and meet the team family Sunday. Tickets at thechicagodogs.com. The Chicago Dogs baseball with everything. Joe's in Schaumburg. He's now on the score. Hi, Joe.
Hey, hi. How are you guys doing?
Fine.
Good. Listen, I agree with you guys 1,000% on the net being extended and going down that line. I've been to hundreds and hundreds of Cubs games, sat behind that netting. It doesn't affect your view. Once you get used to it, you can see right past it. That caller that called, I don't agree with them 100%, but years ago I had 5 kids and 2 adults, and we went to the Cubs game, sat in very close to the same area where the little girl got hit. I went to the Cubs ticket office, explained our situation. We were in the 100 section. They came up with a solution. They put us behind home plate. They didn't charge us. So I tend to agree that somewhat the parents have to have some responsibility. I had 2 3-year-olds, a 6-year-old, and 2 10-year-olds. There was no way we were going to be able to watch all those kids and avoid getting hit if a ball or a bat came flying in our direction. So I tried to come up with a different solution, and the Cubs were awesome and getting us right behind home plate.
That's cool. I'm glad they are able to accommodate you and the group that you're with. Parents, no one here is saying that parents don't have to pay attention when they bring their kids to a game.
It's parents.
They should. you should pay attention as best as you can as a parent. I don't have kids, but I think I get that general premise.
That's
of
whether
the,
you're in an airport or a baseball
kids
game or the mall or the movie theater.
Like,
yes,
I think I get that point.
The job is paying attention.
I think the issue here, though, is even if you're paying attention, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be able to stop or deflect that baseball. And even if you do, there's the potential of someone else getting hurt, or maybe even you getting hurt. And not every ball club is going to be able to do that and reroute your table of seven to some other part of the ballpark. They might have a full house that night. They might not be willing to accommodate you. You might be at to get a jerk ticket guy that just doesn't want to do it.
Or they might say you can go online and know exactly when you make the purchase whether or not these are protected seats or not.
The solution that fixes all of that, that lets Jesse take his kid to the game, that lets the Cubs sit you wherever you need to sit, or the Astros, whoever, is by taking that netting and going down the foul
hole. No, but then caller Jesse says he's not going anymore. The team doesn't get his money because he cannot be bothered by netting.
More seats for a couple of seven-year-olds to sit safely.
Beautifully done. This is Mike in Bolingbrook. He's on the score. Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys. Great show. I just want to say I really appreciate how you guys talk about the real issues. But my point I wanted to make was, so Judd Hoyer called up earlier in the interview and said that he and the Cubs would gladly comply with MLB standards regarding netting. My question is, though, why just comply? You know, of all teams, the Cubs could get ahead of this issue and put the extended nets up before the rest of MLB. Yeah, the Cubs may lose 10%, whatever, of their current season ticket holders.
But no, they wouldn't.
They have hundreds of thousands of people in their currency, in their wait list. That
yeah.
Would be
yeah. I don't think they would lose a single season ticket holder.
I really
if they did
don't
that.
Think so.
Not one. Not one.
I really don't.
And it's not Jed's side of the business. Even though Jed said he would be for it, that would be a Crane decision. When you're talking about the ballpark and anything that's done there, that's business and not baseball.
Some ballparks have gone farther with the netting than MLB mandated. Not a lot, but some. I know a lot of a good number of spring training ballparks did. They went a little farther than the dugouts have. I can some on the west side of Phoenix, that kind of thing. Surprise, I think, in Peoria, I think, have gone a little farther down the line. I hate to be crass about it, but it's, at some point, it's a business decision. You know, I mean, it's why do this? Why put yourself in the way? Why put your fans in the way of this when the solution is kind of there for you? It might not be a perfect solution, but it's so clearly better than the situation you're in now.
In Joliet, we find John, and welcome him to the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the score.
Good morning, guys. To the caller that called with that crazy answer to you guys, until you have a child or you have kids, you'll never know what that poor player yesterday had to go through watching that horrific incident happen. And me being a grandfather, like you guys said, you could watch that game from top to bottom, and something, just a distraction, will distract you, and something bad can happen. MLB has to do something about this. And until then, what do you suggest that, you know, baseball teams do until these nets get put up?
Well, I guess it's like the guy said before. I mean, you could, on your own initiative as a ball club, extend the netting some. You're not under any obligation from Major League Baseball to do so.
I don't know how long it would take. If, in fact, the Cubs right now in a meeting said, we're extending netting foul pole to foul pole, could they do that on the next road trip? I mean, could it just go up? I don't know from an actual physical construction perspective how quickly.
You don't have a net guy?
Can you do that overnight?
You got guys for everything else, for leaky ceilings and basements and meat. We don't have a net guy.
Does it take
to find a net
two
guy.
Days, 3 days? By the
I
way,
really
we are conducting a Twitter poll at Bernstein_MCK to find out, just to take the temperature right here. So go on Twitter to @Bernstein_MCK and vote in our poll. Should MLB extend the netting to the foul poles? So I want to find out. We can just I have a guess. I don't want to
of what the poll results would be.
Yeah,
Cubs are off today, and then they've got the St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis for three before they come back for a 3:05 start against the Angels. It's the makeup on Monday. I don't. Why would it take longer? I mean, there's probably reasons. I don't. You're hanging them on a line that's already there. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Seems to be something that would be easily done. Again, they're under, for your information, they are under no obligation from Major League Baseball to extend the net farther than they already have.
Correct. And I don't think anything would prevent them from, there's nothing that MLB couldn't keep them from doing it if they wanted to do it. Your park is your park. Your fans are your fans. You can protect them as you see fit.
That was the understanding we all came to when Major League Baseball did it decide to extend the nets down to the dugouts. A team or two had done it. And then everybody had to follow suit.
I'm going to write down what I think the percentages are going to end up in our Twitter poll.
Okay.
I'm going to fold it up,
yeah.
And then we're going to open it later.
So
I'm not
going to
mention it. Yeah, we'll do a little thing, and we're going to see. I want you to do the same.
All right.
Yes versus no, how that poll is going to turn out. And once we do transition with Lawrence, we're going to that's when the first time I'll check. I don't want to know. I'm not going to follow it. I'm just going to write it down, and we're going to see who's closer. A lot of people want to jump in to this topic that is jumping right now. And believe it or not, on the text lines, there is a lot of parent blaming. And there's also a particular sentiment with which I disagree strongly. And it's because of personal experience, and I'll tell you exactly why when we come back on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's a league-wide issue, and I think Wrigley would obviously comply with whatever goes on a league basis. I've always been really supportive of having netting all the way down the line. Especially with smartphones now, I just think it's so... It's so difficult. You're not paying attention all the time. The balls are going faster and harder than ever.
And amid that, he almost gave us a wonderful malaprop, but
almost
avoided it and laughed at it if you were listening closely. I don't know if the Cubs could act unilaterally without a mandate from MLB. I would imagine that they could. It would be nice if they did, if any team did.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how that works. If you just inform the league, look, we're doing this. Several people have sent in information with photographic evidence that in the Japanese league, there is netting all the way around.
I think unilaterally, yeah. I think every ballpark goes all the way down to the foul line.
This segment is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Before we get back and grab a couple of phone calls, I know you've been waiting and have you wait too long. Several texters, and just so you know, this is not just some straw man thing. Several texters have said there's no good reason to bring young kids to a baseball game. They're not going to remember it anyway. And it's more of a problem than – look, that's just not true. That if you say a baby that's sleeping in the bucket, maybe I understand that. I understand that there's sometimes they're just not sentient beings at that point. But I know you can ask my son about being a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old at Cubs games and Sox games. And what that's been like for him and what that meant to him. We've got a framed picture of him at a Blackhawks game when he was 5. And he remembers who scored every goal in that game. And it was absolutely fundamental in him eventually wanting to get on the ice and play hockey. You're just wrong about that.
Just think about the thing you're yelling and screaming. If you're the guy standing up yelling, ban 6-year-olds... Listen to the words that you said, ban 6-year-olds. You want to be that guy?
The very latest text from the 708. What's a toddler going to get out of a game anyway? That's from Dave in Berwyn.
Listen to the words you're saying.
They can get a lot out of it, whether it's even seeing Clark the Cub, whether it's with a one souvenir, the first taste of onions on a hot dog, the sights and sounds and smells and what's on the video board and the time that is spent with family. Are you kidding me? That your response in this thing, that this all boils down to ban little kids from baseball parks?
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Ban children from baseball parks. There's a picture of my brother and I with my dad. We were walking to the train to go down to a Cubs game when we were living in Evanston when I was pretty little. Maybe 5, something like that. Ian's 3 or maybe 4. We're somewhat close in age. And I asked my mom once, we were going through, you know, the old family photos and whatnot. I'm like, Mom, I don't remember a particular game. I remember other games when I was very, very little. And I said, what was the point of, you know, this Pop went alone. He had to bring 2 kids with him. That wasn't, he wanted to do that. That seems just like so much. He's like, oh, yeah, he absolutely wanted to do it. He had a blast. And she, you know, because she didn't go to the game. It was just the 3 of us. She has the photo. And the photo's in a frame somewhere in the house. She wouldn't trade that photo for the world. I mean, that photo in and of itself is a memory that she has of the three of us going to do the thing that we all go to. It was the Memorial Day weekend. The six, five of us went to a game. Mom wanted to go as much as everybody else because that photo means something to the family. That's part of our familial collected memory. It means a lot.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves have advanced to the Calder Cup Finals. The Wolves will host Charlotte next week for games 3, 4, and 5 at Allstate Arena. For playoff and ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. It was just an unbelievably human moment last night. And it's, we also know more about these incidents. There was a time when I probably would have said, yeah, you know, pay attention. It's on you. It says so in the back of the ticket. Read the back of your ticket. But a couple things have happened. We're more aware of the dangers, one, because news is able to travel faster and better.
Of course.
We know every time Addison Russell throws his bat in the stands, for instance, and last year when it hit a toddler.
Right.
It happens. We know around the league now when it happens, what the damage is, who's hurt, who's died. And we can understand how often it's happening. Also, like you say, the ball has never flown faster. The exit velocity has never been higher. Thirdly, teams are not expecting you to pay attention because they're telling you to look everywhere else. They're demanding you look everywhere else often. On your phones, text this right now to this.
It's part of the marketing of going to a game. I just can't imagine standing up and saying, ban 6-year-olds from baseball. You sound like the bad guy in the Hunger Games. Like, what are you doing? Ban 6-year-olds? That's your go-to? That's the solution that you've reached?
Bill is in Indianapolis, and he's on Bernstein and McKnight.
Hey, guys. Love your show.
Thanks, Bill.
I work at a minor league park, and this has been a concern. 2 points. One is, you know, the minor leagues are now using the Major League Baseball this season.
That's right.
The AAA
numbers.
AAA.
Astronomical. Yes.
Yeah.
Astronomical. You know, I'm there before batting practice. During batting practice, and it's not about the cell phones. Yes, that's part of it, but that ball is harder, it's shinier, and it's flying. You know, it's just physics. And then the other point I want to make is, you talk to any player, they make sure they don't get seats for their family along where that netting does not reach out.
Correct.
They specifically avoid that, and it's just, you know, they have to do something about it yesterday. They have to move it from pole to pole, and kids should still be able to go to the game. Sometimes, you know, one of the big problems is a lot of times parents don't even pay attention to their kids in the aisles. You got to chase them out of there. But, yeah, I think it's not just MLB, but, yeah, AAA now. And something has to be done.
Thanks for the call, Bill. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no one here is saying that parents don't have to pay attention to the kids. No one here is abdicating that responsibility. No one here is saying it's not. Just let your kids run free range all over the ballpark. That's not the opposite of kids should be allowed to go to games. It's not. Things can happen at the same time.
No one is saying parents shouldn't parent. But we're talking about a 110-mile-an-hour line drive.
Uh-huh.
You can't parent that.
At what age then?
It's not like properly stepping on and off an escalator.
So like 6 and under, you can't go to a ball game, and then what? Like 65 and older, you can't go.
Nope. Special seating
section. Probably like the same reaction time.
Yep.
So now
old people. No.
Now you're going to restrict baseball fandom, which is already restricted because it's a slow and boring game. Now you're going to restrict it down to just the 25 to 52 year olds. That's good. It's a solid plan.
Elk Grove Village. It is Nick. He's on the score. What's happening, Nick?
Hi, guys. Love your show. Thanks for taking my call. One thing that, well, it really bugs me to hear anyone say that, you know, you have to pay closer attention at the games. With all the distractions and everything that everyone's talked about, what I haven't heard was there's very little rise in those club boxes. I've sat down there a number of times, and people's heads are in the way. There's a lot of times where you're leaning left, leaning right to try and see the batter, and you can barely see the batter at times. And then you got beer vendors up and down the aisles, and people standing up, and you can't see the batter half the time when you're down in those club boxes. And you know, I've seen line drives hit, you know, an empty seat 3 or 4 seats down that I was paying attention, and I couldn't see the ball coming off the bat. It just bugs me to hear people say that, you know, you got to pay closer attention when you're sitting down there, and it's your own fault. It's extremely difficult. Not just the distractions. It's tough to see the batter when you're down there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a lot going on at the ballpark, man. Even if you were the only one in that seat, and they told you that a 110 mile an hour whistler's coming right at you, I don't know that you catch it 10 times out of 10.
It's a thought from Glenn here, who has emailed. He said, with a caveat, I'm not a tort lawyer, though he is a lawyer. He said, here's what I think is going on with MLB and netting. When you sue someone for negligence, you are alleging that they have failed to meet the standard of care that a reasonable person would show. That's often determined by what everyone else is doing. The second one team in MLB extends their netting, it raises the bar for every other team to meet it to avoid liability if they get sued.
Sure.
Accordingly, then, using the perverse logic of litigation avoidance, no team is going to do this of its own volition because they will get intense pressure from other teams that don't want to do this for whatever reason. Fun stuff. And to correct something you said before, in the Japanese league, that is league mandated, probably for very similar reasons. It is not a unilateral team by team. That is my mistake. That is top down with the way that they have mandated netting there. And that is with attention paid. And, you know, the way that they handle the fan interaction is very, very different, with organized cheering and all sorts of fan engagement and involvement in completely different ways. That's a completely different culture than we have of just pure spectation.
It makes sense. I mean, just... It just makes sense to provide more opportunity for people to go to the game and feel a little bit safer while they're there. Just seems to make sense to me.
We got the Midday Midway coming up. You know, we've been doing the story about the horrors of Mount Everest and people looking at photos of the lines to get to the summit and thinking that they're fake when they're actually real. And now Nepal is responding, the actual country of Nepal, where they're asking them, look, limit some of these opportunities, limit the licenses to climb Everest. And Nepal has responded.
Okay.
And also, a way to vent your frustration in Manhattan that could be safer than all other alternatives.
We have a terrifying Florida story and an obsession of LeBron James that I didn't know about before this.
That is all ahead of Len Casper,
that's right,
who is going to tell us in his own words what last night felt like and what, how he felt, how he's feeling today about it. He's coming up at the top of the hour. You have WSCR, The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint! Mouth-watering water. We discussed last night's baseball stories, and they were in Houston. Albert Almora having to go through the horror of watching his line drive hit a young girl, and we saw it unfold in real time. We saw their reactions unfold. We talked about how they felt. We heard from Albert Almora. We will hear from Len Casper, who was there, and the wonderful call by Pat Hughes. Descriptive and real and human, and put all of us there, unfortunate though it may be, to have been witness to that or involved in that in any way. Tim Anderson got hit in the head by Glenn Sparkman, and we played the dueling calls, the television calls, where I think Jason Benetti was absolutely right, saying you're the Royals, you did what you did before, that's why your starting pitcher got kicked out of the game, whether he meant it or not. And then we played the Royals call that said, oh, it's 86 miles an hour, come on,
it's just 86.
As and they said that someone would explain to Tim Anderson,
that's right,
because he's not capable of understanding himself that it was a change up, and the fact that, oh, at 86, getting hit in the face 86, that's no big deal,
despite the fact that Tim, first thing he said in the post game interview, I know it was an accident, I saw his face, I know he didn't mean to, doesn't mean he has to like it. Midway starts with a GQ profile on LeBron James. And it's one of those, at first I thought, okay, it's just one of these lifestyle pieces. LeBron and some luggage company are teaming up for, you know, they're going to release a new line of luggage or whatever. But I learned something about LeBron James that I didn't know before. You tell me if you knew this. He's a two-suitcase kind of guy, he says, to lead off this GQ article. He's got the 15-16 size shoe, something like that. So he's got to be very efficient with how he packs. That's how he sets up his whole thing. But that's not the biggest issue concerning how LeBron has to pack.
Is it the wine fridge?
No, it's not the wine fridge. It's he's got a travel look, right? He travels with a game look. Packs his essentials in his room, like my toiletries, my Beats pill, my iPad, my game film, and my candles.
His candles.
Candles. LeBron James says that joyfully because LeBron James is a candle-packing traveler. I have to light a candle in my room on every road trip while I'm there. It has a lot to do with the energy of the universe. I'm very high on that. I actually get that from my wife. But I also just love the smell of candles. You know, hotel rooms can have a stagnant smell. I think a candle gives it a fresher smell. I can bring some home with me. It makes me very comfortable. So the energy, the essence behind a candle, and also the smell quality of just keeping me comfortable away while I'm away from home. All of that means LeBron's second bag is two candles in it. LeBron James is a candle guy.
Okay.
He even goes so far to say in later on in the GQ piece that if he runs out of candles, like on a long road trip or something, he'll have to go down to the hotel lobby, buy a candle, just have to bring it up into the hotel room to stay lit with him.
Because of the energy of the universe?
Because of the energy of the universe. Also, it smells nice.
Okay.
I didn't know that about LeBron James, and I thought you should.
You know what happens now, don't you? You know how the NBA works.
Everybody's going to get candles.
Now it's a thing, and now everybody's going to have a candle guy, and now we're going to have a candle arms race where they're actually going to be going. You're going to have boutique personal chandlers, maybe Tyson, who are going to be doing this for people. Congratulations to Chicago for May, now being the wettest May in the history of Chicago. It's also the deadliest May that Everest has ever had. Oh. I don't think one has anything to do with the other. 11 people have died this month trying to climb Everest. One of the major reasons is that long line to get to the summit, and people stand out there in 29,000 feet, and your body is not designed to stand in line as if you're at the bank, you know, waiting to summit Everest. What happens is your blood kind of starts to boil on you, and you get edemas, and you make poor decisions because you have problems with brain function, and then next thing you're doing, you're falling down a mountain, and there's no protective netting to save you. Also, apparently, according to experts in Nepal, they say people are not training very hard. They just want to check a box. They underestimate Everest. The next thing is people are reaching out to Nepal to say, you know what, limit the number of people that can climb. Because we got too many people, we got traffic jams up there. They get a good weather day. They all want to summit together, and then a bunch of them die.
No six-year-olds.
And don't bring your six-year-olds or grandma. And Nepal's answer is, nah, no, that's on you. Part of the reason is Nepal gets $11,000 for every license they issue. Each person pays $11,000.
And that's over the table.
To climb Everest, right. And
Because believe me.
That's before you've paid for like the best Sherpas and all that stuff. So Nepal's like, no, that's kind of on you. Once we got that 11 grand, maybe you survive, maybe you don't. You are able to climb on the other side that is controlled by China, but it's much more popular to do it through the Nepali side, and they're just saying no. This year, they have 381 people permitted to climb. It is the highest ever. Foreign climbers pay that 11 grand, and they also must provide a doctor's note attesting to their fitness, but even the most fit person isn't designed to stand around for a few hours at 29,000 feet or 26,000 feet or whatever it is. So you can part with your money and part with your life, and Nepal's kind of cool with that.
Just to break up the midway here, Bob Nightingale has a statement from Major League Baseball on the incident that happened in the Cubs-Astros game last night. Albert Almora hit a foul ball that struck a four-year-old girl. MLB's statement per Bob Nightingale reads like this: "The events at last night's game were extremely upsetting. We send our best wishes to the child and family involved. Clubs have significantly expanded netting and their inventory of protected seats in recent years. With last night's event in mind, we will continue our efforts on this important issue.
What does that mean?
A statement with very little meaning so far from Major League Baseball after the incident last night.
What efforts will you continue?
That is boilerplate statement. That's what that is.
That is, we are making a statement. This is our statement, so stated.
We better have a statement out before 11. Otherwise, we won't have a statement. So we better put a statement together. Excellent work there. So here's what you need to know for this story. There's a little bit of backstory to it. Pat Saunders is a reporter for the Denver Post, right? Okay. Drew Goodman is the play-by-play man for the Rockies. Drew Goodman has a book out about the Rockies called If These Walls Could Talk, and Pat Saunders wrote a review of that book. It's a pretty positive review because it's a pretty positive book. And in it, Saunders writes that it's a celebration of the team, so don't expect to find a critique or harsh analysis of players, managers, or GMs like Dan O'Dowd or Jeff Breidich. However, in the book, Breidich, now you tell me how get off my lawn this is from Jeff Breidich, who is a relatively new general manager. He says this about those who make comments about his job. This is the Rockies general manager. I think I'm personally blessed with the capacity to not really care what's said about me all that much. I don't really buy into the whole media evaluation. The reality is, and this is going to sound petty and bad, and it does. If you just objectively look at the people who are evaluating us every day, you know they've never come close to doing this job and all the work that goes into it. And most of them, probably 99% of them, they've never even led anything in their lives. They've worked for themselves, they've been self-interested beat writers who have worked for themselves, and they have a job to do every day. I had the good fortune of seeing that for a long time before taking this job, so I knew not to put a whole lot of time and energy into what they think about me. It'd be like if I went to a hospital every day and wrote a blog about the job done by one of the surgeons and the things he screwed up. That's crazy. I know nothing about brain surgery, nor have I ever even worked on the path to becoming a brain surgeon. That's what goes on in this industry and other sports industries.
Dear Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Rockies general manager Jeff Breidich, who has just done a masterful get off my lawn to beat writers. I congratulate Jeff on the bitch of a time he's going to have the rest of the season dealing with local media.
Yeah, well, what bothers me is his assumption of self-interest. Do you think these guys are really like being away from their families and traveling, doing it just for themselves?
Yeah.
They could be actually, think about this, they might be doing it to inform their readership.
To say nothing of the fact that while baseball teams internally do have measurements and algorithms and all that kind of stuff on players that we just don't have publicly yet, the baseball watching public has never been closer to understanding the efforts of a franchise. Got a ways to go, never been closer to understanding.
If you're walking around Lower Manhattan and somebody cuts you off or there's a rideshare driver right in front of you and you want to pull a Ratso Rizzo, hey, I'm walking here, instead of slamming on the car or instead of doing that, you now can take your anger out on any one of a number of punching bags.
Huh.
A design group from Savannah, Georgia, called Don't Take This the Wrong Way. It's sort of a artistic design group, have placed large, rectangular, bright canary yellow punching bags at various places throughout the city. Some are freestanding, some are on poles, but it is considered to be an outlet for emotions to develop a healthier way to address personal and collective issues in a public setting. It is essentially an interactive art installation that is there to allow you to express anger in that way. Yet, that said, do you want to be the guy in public scene punching a punching bag on a street corner?
No. Do we know that that's healthy? Is letting it go like that in a public space on a punch? I don't know. I mean, there's purporting that it's healthy, that this is bad. I mean, certainly it's better than punching a cab or another person or, you know, like the ground, because that ends up with broken wrists more times than not.
Or slamming your umbrella on the streets. It is. I'm interested to see when we start getting the first footage of the first people who decide to do this, because now there probably will be memes of some kind.
Oh, there's going to be like a live channel or something. There's going to be a Periscope stream of these punching bags and just people letting loose.
I'm open to the idea.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. When we come back, it's our weekly visit with Len Casper, who obviously called the game between the Cubs and Astros last night. A pretty horrifying event, something that was difficult to have watched, very difficult to have been involved and participated in. Albert Almora, you heard from him after the game already on the show. I think it'd be interesting to hear the broadcast point of view from Len Casper when we get back. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.